Here at Strange Magic, Amanda and I talk about our views on tarot and the ways in which we practice magic.
And we understand that other people have different ways of practicing and different interpretations of the tarot, and that's totally okay.
Take what you'd like and leave the rest. Hello and welcome to Strange Magic, a podcast about the tarot, magic, spells, feminism, life, love, etc. I'm your host, Sarah Faith Gottesdiener, along with my co-host,
Amanda Yates Garcia.
And today we have a very special episode that I know is near and dear to both of our hearts. We are talking about the tarot card, the High Priestess.
Woot woot.
We're talking about the High Priestess, which in itself could be its own podcast. We could just have a podcast called The High Priestess Podcast.
High Priestess Podcast. I'd tune in.
Maybe next lifetime we'll do that. But for now, we're just trying to have a 30-minute episode talking about this incredibly powerful, timely, and timeless archetype. Today we'll be discussing this card and how a key part of the cards, in fact, is about the historical ideas of these keys. For example, the High Priestess could be seen as much as a roadmap about how a certain culture or cultures view and feel about the ideas of women practicing magic and healing and trauma, as much as the actual card itself.
Absolutely. So I like to think of the major arcana cards, which High Priestess is number two, as kind of coming in an order. So the magician gathers his tools, takes action, right? It's dealing with the elements of power. And then the High Priestess comes in and regroups, right? So this is the first time that the individual ego encounters the other, right? It sees itself reflected outside of itself. So it's about recognizing the other, recognizing that there's more out there to know. It's the stage, I guess maybe it would be associated with like the mirror stage in development. We'll talk about that later. But the idea of seeing that there's something outside of oneself. So the High Priestess is a researcher. She explores, she gathers knowledge, but her knowledge comes through intuitive insight and through a gathering of experience, through the physics of the world, through touch, through scent, through smell, and through mysterious form of knowing.
Absolutely. I feel like if the magician is the mirror of the self, like seeing the self in tangible form and the will and imagination and all that that energy encompasses, the High Priestess is sort of a mirror to the interior self and that sort of endless well, that kind of like black obsidian mirror that we can just go deeper and deeper into. You know, one thing I kind of want to point out is that traditionally the High Priestess card in tarot scholarship has been sort of denoted as being passive or receptive. I kind of just want to rethink this archetype, because if the High Priestess is in fact an archetype of the witch, which we all know it is, a witch is actually pretty flippin' active, right? We could argue that imagination, psychic ability, the intangible, mystery come in as like an intangible kind of state. It comes in when we're quiet. It comes in when we're ready to receive. But as an archetype, I do want to revise the High Priestess as being active and powerful.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. This is where it starts to get really exciting for me. Okay. So I often think of the High Priestess as being on the heroine's journey, right? And going back to what you were saying earlier about how it tells us sort of the story of the witch under patriarchy, right? Initially, the High Priestess is
going
like
underground.
Isis and Nana. She chooses to go underground. She chooses to go into the underworld to do all sorts of work there to rescue, usually to rescue her lover or to transform her sister, depending on the myth that you're looking at. But so most often the High Priestess is associated with the goddess Persephone because of the pomegranates behind her on her throne. What's interesting about this is then the goddess, the High Priestess, appears as this goddess who is abducted, who is taken into the underworld against her will. And that speaks to trauma, right? So the High Priestess is the sort of traumatized feminine who's forced underground, who's kind of forced to submit, who's forced into passivity, but she becomes the queen of the underworld. She is able to move between these two spaces. She can go into the underworld and she can come back into the light. And as such, she is a healer because she learns through that process. She becomes powerful down there. She takes the knowledge that she gains in the dark and she brings it back up into the light where she can use it to help others.
I mean, yes, a woman. Victory to the goddess.
Victory to the goddess.
I can't not bring up the goddess Hecate. The transformation and disfiguration of the goddess Hecate, who originally was the queen goddess of everything. Literally, she was the moon. She was the cosmic mother. And then as, you know, time went on and the Roman Empire progressed, she got demoted. So then she became, you know, going from queen of the stars, queen of everything, queen of life, queen of birth, queen of death, queen of you name it.
Queen of witches.
Queen of witches. She got demoted to the underworld. So then for a while, she was the queen of the underworld. Then Hades, our friend, our sad, sorrowful, can't get a wife friend, Hades became the king of the underworld. And she was sort of demoted to kind of this weird liminal sort of space.
She's just like the demon hag of the underworld.
The other thing that I think is really fascinating is that she started as sort of a middle-aged-ish or young-ish sort of woman. And then as her demotion and power, I'm putting in quotes, went on, she then aged. Mm. So Hecate is, like you said, a lot of people think of her as crone energy, you know, a sort of older, sort of hag-like, scary. She has three heads. She has hounds. Her helpers are kind of sort of creepier, you know, sort of nighttime esoteric. She keys and crossroads and pretty spooky stuff, which, I mean, I enjoy. I mean, she's like one of my favorite deities. And
she's got to be. I mean, all witches are priestesses of Hecate, so.
But I think that's interesting to think about in conjunction with the High Priestess card itself, as well as what it's ruled by. It's ruled by the moon. And so thinking about how the moon has also changed in popular culture as well. You know, first it was sort of this demonizing, scary, controlling sort of thing. We had werewolves. We had lunacy. You know, we had this sort of fear of the night and fear of the intuition and fear of the darkness, all these themes that the High Priestess card can kind of encompass. And then over time now we're sort of, I'm putting in quotes, reclaiming spiral time, reclaiming nonlinear time, seeing the uses of it in healing, seeing the uses of it in magic, seeing the uses of living in a spiral and a cycle for self-development and to help sort of the betterment of all. So I think we are sort of coming back around in how we view this card and how we view certain deities and archetypes and energies that I think is really exciting.
It's so exciting. And the thing is, every culture determines their own magic, right? So magic is historically and culturally exclusive to the time in which it's produced. So we're always recreating, re-envisioning, and reimagining the magical and intuitive and esoteric legacies that we've been given. So when we're given the High Priestess legacy, we're reimagining and we're redeveloping, rebirthing the High Priestess. Now, the High Priestess is speaking to us, A, of trauma, of going into the underworld, of being taken there against your will. So she often comes up during that time. But she's also giving you insight into how to get out of it, which is to trust your intuition, to trust your body, to trust your own internal sense of knowing. And then she teaches you how to share that insight with the rest of the world, because she is a teacher. She holds the book of the law in her hands, right? So she has access to that. But there's also this quality of the keeper of the secrets, the keeper of the mystery. I mean, she is the priestess to the mystery, to the unknown. She's the guardian of that space. And so when you encounter the High Priestess, you're encountering these spaces of mystery and the unknown, and it's asking you to sit with your discomfort a little bit and to be willing to go there with her.
Well, I think it's like, to your point, I think it's interesting to bring that up. It's about being comfortable and living in moon time, being comfortable and living in the void, using our intuition and our subconscious as healing tools, right? Not being afraid of encountering them, but recognizing them for what they are, which is if we're talking that the magician is consciousness, right? I'm putting this in quotes. Then the high priestess is subconsciousness, which we all know from, you know, our own research into psychology and such, that the subconscious actually makes up 70-80% of our brain matter. You know?
It's the dark matter, which is larger than the actual material.
Little tippy top, you know, iceberg of consciousness. So, you know, when
because it's the collective, it's everything.
And nothing
at the same time.
And then everything. Yeah. So this is what we're talking about. You know, I feel like it's really interesting to try to speak about the high priestess because she sort of exists beyond language. She's source and the birth canal and birth and back again, you know? So it's really interesting to me, the high priestess a lot of times exists in a realm beyond language and or all of the languages. So it's really interesting to try to have like a short podcast back and forth about her because her very nature is spiralic. Her very nature is sort of nebulous in a way. It exists a bit beyond definition.
Yes, I agree that she does embody all of those things. And I also think, you know, we had talked before about whether or not we would bring up this word shaman in this episode. The word shaman does have some culturally appropriative elements and qualities to it, which is a really big and complex issue. And I'm not sure that we'll have time to get into that, but we'll see how far we get with this. But so technically the idea of a shaman is someone who travels between the worlds, right? The high priestess is essentially functioning as the shaman. She's someone who can travel between the worlds, right? She enters the realm of Hecate. She is the priestess to Hecate. So we are functioning as her, or we are responding to her archetype, or she is moving through us when we get the high priestess in a reading, which means that we are being asked to enter into the dark space of mystery, that we are going into the unknown, and that it is boundless and endless and sometimes scary, but also beautiful and full of knowledge. And then what the shaman does is she takes that knowledge that she gains in the underworld and she brings it back out in such a way that it can be healing for others. And so that's a major difference between the magician and the high priestess, right? Is the magician doesn't have the same impulse towards service that the high priestess does, because the magician is really working more for their own ego, which is important. They're doing the work of magic. But then the high priestess is doing that magic in the spirit of service. She has got a lot to teach.
I have a lot of things to say in response to what you just said. I've kept them in bullet points in my brain, so I'm going to go through them. First is I just need to like come out in public about language and contemporary language and witchcraft or the trend of certain languaging. It is not that I have a problem with the word shaman. I don't. I mean, I've done research and the word shaman comes from many places. There are shamans in many cultures. I have a problem with the way white women are using the word shaman right now, today. And so as a result, I mean, it's very similar to bristling I get around words like healing or something. I know. That will be another episode. These words that actually, by the way they're being used, actually lose their meaning. The point of this, and the reason why I'm bringing this up in this actual episode with this terminology and with this tarot card, is that for me, a very visceral living through of the high priestess is beyond language. You know, I'm not saying we shouldn't use language to try to explain things. I just think it's interesting that for me, she exists beyond language and or maybe is the source of language. Like maybe we're trying to create language to discuss magic, mystery, intuition, creativity, art, collective healing, on. And that, you know, in that defining it, something sort of gets lost. I just need to say that on air because I'm having a lot of ambivalent issues with the way certain words are being used in contemporary kind of consumerism, spirituality or new age thought. And shaman is one of those, only because it's not that the shaman isn't important. The shaman is incredibly important. It's the way it's being commodified by by white women. As I see it, as I personally see it, that actually takes it far from its roots and doesn't really fully explore where it came from and definitions of it.
Yes. What specifically is it about the way that that's being used that you find problematic?
I think that the way it's being used is being used in not a high priestess way, which is to say it's being used for consumerism, it's being used for capitalism, it's being divorced from the actual like history of where maybe people are getting their training from or getting their knowledge base from, which, you know, in my very small experience with shamans, I'm not a shaman, but I have, you know, gone to them and done shamanic journeying and groups and, you know, one-on-one. It's a very long process of becoming a shaman.
So in my understanding of the word shaman, right, it's a word from Siberia, but it's also a word that anthropologists, Western anthropologists, created to talk about a practice that they found in Siberia, but that they saw similarities with all over the world. So the idea of a shaman, like if you're a Peruvian shaman, the word shaman is not Peruvian, but you're doing something that Western anthropologists are saying is like this other thing. So already the word shaman is problematic in that regard. However, essentially indigenous practices all over the world, from the Swami in Finland to the ancient practices of the Celts to the practices of the Peruvian Amazon or in Indonesia, you know, yes, there are all these people all over the continent of Africa, everywhere, right? Essentially what we're saying is an indigenous holy person. And so I can see why, and I agree that this idea of saying like, oh, well, we're a shaman, or someone is a shaman, or the high priestess is a shaman, or the way that white women are using this idea, or sort of like taking this idea of like indigenous practice and then saying, oh, I do that, I use that, that is mine, is deeply problematic. However, I also think white people do have that in their history and they should be allowed to go back to it and to connect to that.
1,000, 1,000,000%. What I want to know is that, you know, if someone is a white person of European descent and they're calling themselves a shaman, I want to know exactly where their lineage comes from, exactly who their teachers were, exactly what their, I'm putting in quotes, like shamanism consists of. I want them to get more specific.
Would you ask the same thing of an indigenous person, that they need to prove to you that they have?
No.
In the studying that I've done, basically, the idea of with shamans is that you don't call yourself a shaman.
Correct.
People call you a shaman.
Correct.
It's whether or not you are of service to people. Your community calls you a shaman. And also in some cultures, you meet your shaman teacher for 2 weeks in the desert. You go there, you pay them like whatever you have, whether it's like a goat or you pay them $1,000 or whatever it is. Or some people, they study with that person and live with them for 5 years before they're able to do any practices. So I don't feel like we get to go and say, oh, you're a shaman and you're not a shaman. However, I do feel like what you're addressing is this idea of like, there's something uncomfortable about white people in particular using a word that, even though technically it isn't speaking just to the practices of people of color, we know that it is kind of associated with that. And so by calling oneself a shaman or alluding to the practices of shamanism, it feels like it has the potential to be cheapening.
We have a lot more to discuss. I just want to let our listeners know that that's something that, you know, I'm thinking about. I know you're thinking about, Amanda, on different levels and conversations we have. And I would just say, in the realm of, again, the high priestess beyond language, language defining, going in between worlds, nebulousness, you know, revising, redefining, all of this, I just could not touch upon it because shaman, the word, is one of the words in a bank of words that I find in contemporary, like I'm putting in quotes, white spirituality is deeply problematic. So I'm glad we were able, for me, not for you, for me. So I just need to touch upon it because I know that like originally the title of this episode, it has shaman in it. So I just wanted to like clarify what we're thinking about, how we're defining it, you know, how we're parsing it out, and then like we can like move on. But I feel like, you know, there is also an uncomfortableness of the high priestess that I feel like is like kind of nice in this interaction, where it's sort of like, you know, it gives us pause. We're sort of both trying to like parse certain things out, which kind of goes back to sort of the next point of the card for me. If we're going to compare her to the magician, the High Priestess is magic. The magician practices magic. We sort of talked about the High Priestess being of nature, being nature. The magician, he's in nature. Like, he's in it and he's like maybe utilizing it, but the High Priestess is magic, is nature, is the thing. She researches, she turns within, she heals herself, and then she kind of heals others.
It's interesting. I'm really interested in this distinction. I see the realm of the unconscious, or sort of the underworld, is kind of an aspect of the void that is the Fool. And I don't quite see the High Priestess in the same way in terms of like how I interpret it. I'm very interested in what you're saying, that she is beyond language. For me, I see her, and that's why in terms of the shamanistic function, or the healer function, or the priestess function, is that as the priestess, she is an intermediary on some levels between this space of the void and the unconscious and the realms of light. That's why I see her as that shaman, quote unquote, for or lack of a better word, or priestess, we might say, in the sense that the priestess serves a social role. She's not just turning inward to explore herself.
Correct.
She has a social function for her community.
Correct.
And so I see her as engaging with this space that is beyond language, which is the realm of intuition. But I also see her as articulating that. And that's why I feel like she's holding that book. So I'm interested in...
Well, so in what I'm saying is I see her as both. Mm. I see her as the magic, or the intuition, or the mystery, insert, you know, intangible kind of language there. And the person who then decides to go out and serve others, or speak about it, or try to impart the knowledge. She's two. So she's the thing and sort of the way we're like describing or reflecting the thing, right? Because that's two, self and other. That's number one. And number two, you know, again, I can only sort of speak about her if I'm to compare her to the magician. The magician, in a way, is about harnessing something else, or harnessing one specific aspect of the self and the energy to have to create an outcome, to create a desired effect. To me, the High Priestess experiences it and lives it. She doesn't have to kind of harness it, or like, you know, conscious it with the eye. She is living the thing. She is the sobbing after, you know, you have a breakthrough. She is the feeling, you know, magic go through your fingertips to the crown of your head. She is, you know, feeling like a channel or a medium, or, you know, she's this visceralness. She's this player or this actor out of the magic, because she is the magic. We have other things we could talk about. We could talk about the symbolisms. I mean, there's a lot of symbolism in her card.
Yeah, let's go there.
We touched upon the pomegranate.
Right. So the pomegranate being the seed, the fruit that Persephone ate when she was in the underworld, that meant that she would have to come back throughout the year.
It's also, let's just talk about pomegranates too. It's also a very sexual fruit.
Totally. I mean, and it's so beautiful, right? Mm-hmm. Also, we could think that probably like the fruit of the tree of knowledge was a pomegranate, right? And it's my understanding that the pomegranate trees grew in the groves of Astarte in Babylonia, right? So one of the original, or one of the earliest goddesses of Mesopotamia, was Astarte or Asherah. And she had these groves of sacred trees. Those were her temples, probably pomegranates included. So then when the Judeo-Christian world started to impose on this space, they cut down her groves and said, oh, the evil Satan snake lived there, and if you eat of those trees, then you are evil and you're cast out of the Garden of Eden. So they would like chop down her sacred groves. Mm-hmm. So in a way, she, you know, the High Priestess connects us with primordial goddesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I love that you brought that up too, because the cutting down of the tree is this common motif as used against goddesses, you know, in ancient culture. And I think it's interesting to think about the pomegranates as being behind this high priestess prominently as a reclamation, you know?
Yeah, and because she's so often considered to be this sort of frigid ice queen, like in a lot of, especially the Victorian or more sort of patriarchal visions of the tarot, that she's like barren, that she is icy, that she is frigid, that she, you know, she doesn't have that sexy
untouchable.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, she is virgin because she is
Vestal.
A woman unto herself. Correct. Right. Yeah. She is not in relation in the same way that the Empress is. Right. She's sovereign.
And like that kind of goes nicely into the other symbolism that's on her person. Right. Which is she has the triple goddess crown on her head.
Yes. The crown of Isis.
Which also, you know, some people talk about as being a stand-in for the womb.
Yes.
She has around her neck a cross. I'm trying to make my way down the Rider-Waite Coleman Smith. Like, I'm like starting from head to toe.
Right, yeah. So in that one, yes, she does. She has a cross. She's wearing like the blue robes, which associate her with the Virgin.
She has a Bible or a Torah in her lap.
And which in a lot of the like the Victorian renditions of magic is like the idea of how's it go? Torah, rota, orat,
right.
Ator,
yeah.
The tarot speaks the law of Hathor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So she's associated them with Hathor. Mm-hmm.
And then as we flow down, her gown sort of disseminates into a crescent moon/water.
Oh my God, I love that part so much. So she is really connecting, like just visually connecting with all these ancient goddesses, Isis, Hathor, the Virgin Mary, you know, she is the divine feminine Mary Magdalene. And she's on the throne. And then like in the Kabbalah and like Jewish mysticism, the idea of the throne as being the Shekinah, right? The throne of God, the like the seat of God, like she is. And then in Isis is also like the throne, right? Like she is majesty.
Correct.
Whereas the king might sit on the throne, but she
is like
the power.
That's right? Sort of like, again, that's kind of what I mean when I say she's magic and the.
Right. And the one who sits on the throne.
Let's talk about the pillars.
Okay.
Because I feel like no one ever talks about those pillars.
And I feel like it's because they get, you know, really complicated.
BJ.
Yeah. Right.
Boaz. Boaz and. Joaquin? I can't say. I've never heard it said out loud. Joaquin. A lot of these words are like, I've only read them. I've never actually heard a human being say them.
Well, so they're the things that we've been navigating already, right? They're like the laws of polarity, right? The dark, the light, the upper world, the underworld, the left, the right, the yin, the yang.
I also read once that they were supposed to be a symbol of the first temple.
What do you mean?
The first temple that got resurrected and then destroyed. So like they're the symbols of the ancient, like the most ancient knowledge that there is around religion, around mysticism, around spirituality.
Yeah, I know Paul Foster Case writes a lot about those. I mean,
that's your fave.
Yeah, right. My fave.
Your problematic fave.
No, I mean, I like him. But I do think it's interesting in the way that the high priestess is working with this idea of polarity or binary.
Mm-hmm. And she literally sits in between the two.
Right, exactly. She's the conduit, right? She is liminal, the connector.
In between, connector.
Let's talk a little bit about her shadow side. So what's the problem with the high priestess? You get a priest, high priestess in a reading. Why should that be a problem for you, if it is ever?
To me, there's a couple different levels to the shadow of this card, kind of more collective and then sort of more personal. Collectively, this card can be linked, as you sort of brought up, Amanda, so nicely, to negative connotations of sort of the iciness of feminine or trans or non-binary magic and mystery, right?
I love that you're bringing that up. Yeah, absolutely. Like, there's something that patriarchy is troubled by with the high priestess in terms of her sexuality. Like, they don't like it. But yeah, so shadow side of the high priestess, like not being able to speak, not being able to use your voice, right? Like not being able to get in touch with your intuition, feeling lost, feeling traumatized, feeling oppressed, neglected, like you're being forced to succumb to a will that's not your own.
I feel like I just had an aha moment as you were speaking about what the patriarchy doesn't like about the high priestess and their sexuality. And I think it's because it's a sexuality that's not linked to pregnancy or production.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh.
Big so there's, the yes. there's that. So let's think about that. Everything that you said, as well as maybe feeling like you have a block to speaking or feeling like you have to kind of keep silent or not share your gifts or not step into your power as well. And then that sort of dovetails into this idea of the loneliness of the high priestess. It can be lonely if someone isn't there to understand what you're going through or to hold your hand or to kind of know what you're trying to seek out beyond language, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And I had an aha moment while you were speaking because I was thinking about how the high priestess, her sexuality is not available for like male enjoyment. Like that's not what is going on. That's not her purpose. And I also love what you're saying about, you know, that feeling of like being lonely, you know, and the high priestess is then a form of she's an initiatory figure because, for instance, in many shamanic traditions, I know that we have trouble with this word, but the idea of the initiation is like one where you're like taken into the middle of the wilderness and it's like, find your own way home. And so that feeling naked, is one of abandonment.
Naked and afraid.
Naked and afraid in a world you never made. You're left out there alone and you're like, now what do I do? And that is like a shadow side, but it is also kind of the medicine of the high priestess, which is like, yikes.
I have to deal with this. I have no choice but to deal with this.
The only way out is through our favorite New Age slogan. Okay, so popular culture, where do we see the high priestess if we look around us in the world? I'm thinking first thing that comes to my mind is like nuns in popular culture, right? Like these sort of wise...
Sister Act?
Yeah, well...
That's the only nun that came up in my mind when you were talking.
I mean, I guess that doesn't make me think of the high priestess because they're so...
Lively?
Like, lively and sort of joyful. I mean, why shouldn't she be?
I know that we had talked before about science fiction writers creating brave new worlds like Ursula Le Guin or Octavia Butler, creating these whole new interesting spaces out of their imagination that are sort of integrating the subconscious and the kind of consciousness.
Yeah. I mean, anything that's like a traveler between the worlds, I feel like is going to be, maybe science fiction itself is a domain of the high priestess, because that's something that happens a lot in science fiction as we do travel between the worlds a lot.
Absolutely. I also like other popular culture references we talked about earlier. Off tape was Grace Jones, Kate Bush, Yoko Ono, examples of people being their magic. And that's sort of what I mean when I kind of was talking earlier about trying to describe the high priestess as being a visceral sort of physical embodiment of magic. These people that are just being themselves clearly have a strong connection with their creativity, their sovereignness, right? Their virginity, in quotes, as it is not belonging to anyone but themselves. I think about Yoko Ono with her primal screaming, which feels very high priestess to me.
Yeah, totally.
Kate Bush with her like falsetto operas and her magical worlds that she makes up. Grace Jones as being this priestess, you know, this like topless priestess who patrols the stages and commands the attention of like audiences of hundreds of people.
Or PJ Harvey.
Totally. That's totally like, I think it's like this. And in these ways, these creative people are conduits, and they're conduits for us.
Or Patti Smith.
100%.
Oh my God, she is high priestess extraordinaire.
100%. So I think about that as how there are certain performers that invite us into their visceral experience and then create a visceral experience in us, you know, as they become themselves more fully with the trauma, with the screaming, with the vulnerability of imparting their own worlds and their own viewpoints, that then kind of unlocks something in us and allows us to feel more free and allows those worlds, the scarier worlds of power or fear or desire, to open up to us as like tangible routes that we ourselves can take.
Right. Like, so they go into these realms of the underworld, or they open themselves up to be vehicles as mediums, and then spirit speaks through them.
Absolutely.
We love that. So what does it mean when you get the High Priestess in a reading? I mean, we've gone all around the houses talking about like who she is and what kind of spirit she represents. Remember, this is like a complicated lady that we're talking about here. So brass tacks, we're doing the card. She comes up. What's a person supposed to think?
Again, as we've talked about many times in this podcast, and I will probably say 10 more times. Obviously, when we're giving a reading, it's the card and the other cards that are kind of around it. That being said, if the High Priestess card comes up, I would not be a responsible reader if I did not tell my client that maybe they've heard it before, but if they haven't, I'm going to tell them they might be a witch. They might be deeply, deeply intuitive. That intuition, that connect. I mean, we're all intuitive, but I'm saying some people have a greater access to that intuition. It comes more easily. And that being said, if that person feels called to explore that and experience that, then this card would be a permission slip, as it were, to go deeper and go further into living more magically and exploring that side of them more, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's calling you to, you know, develop a meditation practice, to do magical practices, to engage in ritual, to learn to trust your intuition. It's often asking you to look at the places like inside yourself that need healing, to like go into the darker realms and then think, how can I be of service with this? Because that is also often the key to healing yourself, is thinking, how can I transmute this, whatever it is that I'm experiencing, and bring it up in a way that can help other people? Because often it's through that spirit of service that is actually the healing medicine. Another thing that I think is really important with the High Priestess when we're talking about listening to your intuition is, I feel like that there's a major misconception about intuition, that intuition is something that happens out in space somewhere. But intuition, and I feel like this is particularly important as for the High Priestess, as her body is a site of trauma often, is about listening to the body, about really tuning into the body, because the body doesn't lie. It contains the multitudes of your experience. It contains your dreams. It contains your memories. It contains your pain. It contains your wounds. And when you really listen to it deeply, it speaks to you. And that's the way that spirit speaks to you, is through your body. So you're often being asked and called to listen to your body more closely, to listen to that intuition, and to honor and guard her secrets.
As well as to do what your intuition, which is that to say that is what is coming up from inside of you, wants you to do physically. You know, I think that's really important. Do you need to scream? Do you need to run? Do you need to sleep more? Do you need to meditate? Do you need to free write? You know, do you need to call in helpers? Do you need to create a visceral physical connection to source, to spirit, to knowledge? To me, it's also a permission slip to rethink any resistance you might have to your own power and to your own healing. I think sometimes it comes up as saying, yes, you are so powerful, and yes, you can heal. And in fact, or heal, I hate that terminology. You are, again, another word, healing. You are ready to really step into the availability to a further healing. Mostly when this card comes up, that healing specifically points to, yes, like wounded healer, intuition, stepping into kind of a visceral experience of developing a magical practice, those sorts of kind of activities that are more spiritual or kind of magical. I also really love how you brought up Amanda being of service, because I also feel like there's this aspect, I'm saying if someone pulls this card, maybe part of you being here is to help the wounded feminine collective.
Exactly. So when the High Priestess comes up for you in a reading, you are being asked to address some of this Persephone story, some of this underworld story in some way, shape, or form. And it might be about like secrets that you are having to keep or mysteries that you are having to encounter or some sort of confrontation with the unknown. Mm. And your secret power as the High Priestess is learning how to navigate those spaces of the unknown and to bring something useful back from that, to bring some medicine back from that. And that's why you're being asked to tune into witchcraft, ritual, those kinds of practices, because those are tools that have been developed over millennia, right? We didn't just invent it. We know witchcraft is trendy now, but all of those things, herbs, like you can go read about herbs in ancient manuals in Latin. You can read about them in papyrus, right? Candles, light, cauldrons, all of that. This is not a new invention, right? These are things people have been working on for thousands of years. These are the tools, and you can use them. You can touch them. You can harness them. You can become a priestess. You already are a priestess, but priestesses use those tools. The magician got those tools, and the priestess is going to put them to use.
Stay tuned, and you can find us
at Oracle of LA, Facebook, Instagram,
or GOTTESSS on Instagram, or visualmagic.info. Thanks so much for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Witches in the head shop, witches in Silmar. Witches on the 405, there's a witch wherever you are.